Joined this morning by Michael P. Jeffries. He's a Dean of Academic Affairs, class of 1949, professor in ethics and professor of American Studies at Wesley College. He's also the author of three previous books, Thug Life, Race, Gender, and the Meaning of Hip Hop, Paint the White House Black, Barack Obama and the Meaning of Race in America, and Behind the Laughs, Community and Inequality in Comedy. His latest book out is a book called Black and Queer on Campus, that reveals the complicated everyday realities of college life for black students who identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or queer. Michael, when you put a book like this together, how do you go about kind of assembling the people that you're going to be taking part in this? What kind of a process is that for you?
Yeah, thanks for the question and thanks for having me. Really what I did was I looked around, first using the internet, for student organizations that were just sort of publicly listed on college and university websites that were created by and led by queer students of color or black and queer folks. So, and then with that public information, I reached out to the advisors of those organizations, the adults, the employees of the college who are charged with supporting those organizations, to try to figure out whether the students in those organizations might be interested. And from there, I was able to make some inroads and make some connections. So all the people that I speak with in the book had already sort of one way or another publicly identified as LGBTQ and were comfortable with that identity. So that was really my process. And then, you know, one thing led to another, and all of a sudden I had, you know, over 60 people that spoke with me.
When you were talking to them, what kind of information were you looking to get out of them? Just sort of let them share their college life experience and their life experience in general?
Yeah, well, it's funny. When I first had the idea for the book, I was very much interested in a couple of things. One was how these student organizations functioned, what kinds of support systems they offered for students in school. And the other topic that I was really interested in was the politics of the moment. I reached out to these folks during the Trump presidency, which was not a good time for many LGBTQ plus people. White supremacy was also on the rise during that time, so black folk were under attack in many ways. And I was interested in hearing the students' reaction to that political reality. But then when I started having the conversations with them, yes, we talked a little bit about politics, and yes, we talked a little bit about their time in the student organizations. But what I ended up getting was a much broader picture of their time in college. So it started out with more specific goals, but I ended up writing a much broader book about their experiences on campus.
So you really owe it all to those young people that shared their story and told you the secrets, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, this book really isn't about me, honestly. It's about sharing the stories of a group of people who, quite honestly, are sort of ignored and not reported on very much. When we do see stories about queer black folk, we're most often led to think of celebrities like Billy Porter on Pose or actors and directors like Lena Waithe, more publicly recognizable queer black celebrities. But the everyday lives of queer black folk aren't just a topic that is frequently discussed. And what the interviews really show is that we can't continue to think of these folks in terms of the stereotypes that we most broadly see. There is no one way to be black, no one way to be queer, and certainly no one way to be black and queer.
From reading through your book, I find out there are many different ways that people identify themselves. I mean, it's not just the LGBTQ plus. The plus part seems to go into lots of different types of minutiae, it seems.
Absolutely. I mean, that was one of the things that was most striking to me, because within the LGBTQ community, there have always been a number of sort of labels and identities that have been embraced and sort of put underneath that umbrella. And I think that usually, when we put these terms together, there's sort of an assumption that really what we're talking about are the main or the most widely recognizable categories, right? Lesbian, gay, bisexual, queer, transgender. But when the students spoke with me, they talked about their comfort with identifying as gender fluid or non-binary. They talked about their comfort in identifying as pansexual, a whole bunch of other labels as well. And I think that what they're wrestling with is really their own development as young adults. I mean, these are 18, 19, 20-year-old people, many of whom are just trying to find the labels that best fit them. And there's a kind of a generosity and a flexibility in the communities that they belong to in terms of how they describe themselves that they find really quite liberating.
Talking today with Michael Jeffries. The book is called Black and Queer on Campus. You went to a lot of historically black colleges and universities, as well as some predominantly white institutions. What similarities or differences did you find out, and did you find that there's more a comfort zone in maybe a black college that you, or is that just an assumption I would make?
Yeah, I mean, it's really different because the students at predominantly white universities felt that when they were included in those spaces, they were sort of included primarily as black folk, that the dual dimensions of their identity weren't really rising to the fore. They didn't necessarily feel comfortable in the spaces reserved for black folk in predominantly white colleges because those spaces weren't necessarily as open to them expressing their gender identity as they would have liked. They felt at predominantly white universities that just on a day-to-day level, walking around town or their experiences in classes, they were more likely to be subject to racism. So there were a lot of challenges for those students at PWIs. And then at historically black colleges and universities, HBCUs, they didn't, right, not surprisingly, they didn't really have as many experiences with day-to-day racism, but they also reported kind of a lack of information, a lack of affirmation, a sense that these institutions weren't really doing much to support them, almost like they were tolerated on these campuses, but not really supported or celebrated. So what they were looking for almost was HBCUs to kind of catch up and really recognize the value that LGBTQ plus folk bring to their campuses and put the support services and the recognition in place that they felt they deserved.
When you talk to these young people, obviously they all come from different backgrounds. What did you find out, any of the similarities or things that relate to them, either related just because of what the African-American community may think of them, also the religious aspects, that type of thing,
yeah.
How did that impact what they were going
through? So one of the big topics in the book is this idea of black homophobia. And there's a stereotype that black homophobia is more dangerous, more violent, more sort of harsh and severe than homophobia more broadly. And one thing I want to say about that stereotype is that oftentimes when we hear complaints about virulent black homophobia, what's happening is our attention is being directed away from the institutional and more long-standing reasons for homophobia, like laws, right, and other kind of institutional practices. If you look at the history of medicine in this country, homophobia was pathologized for years and years, and those are the roots of homophobia. So when we hear about a black culture of homophobia, it's often a distraction. But having said that, right, there is a reality that homophobia plays out differently within many black American spaces. And one of the things that the students talked about is the kind of intersection or the overlay of religious beliefs and philosophy and beliefs about gender within their spaces of worship and within their families. So when they talked about their experiences at home, particularly the issues that they struggled with, they really traced the roots of their experiences in black communities with homophobia to the religious experiences they have in their places of worship and among their family members. And that wasn't a uniform experience, but it was a common thread that I saw across socioeconomic classes, across region, across ethnicity, and things of that nature.
Black and Queer on Campus is the name of the book. When you write a book like this, what do you hope becomes of this? Who do you want to read this? What does this information do? Is this for some future research that someone wants to use to compare something at this place and time? What usually happens for something like this?
Thanks so much. I mean, I really hope everyone reads it, to be honest. I mean, this is a book that I feel is desperately needed because, you know, it really hasn't been written before. This range of voices of queer black college students just hasn't been given a platform before. So my short answer is really everyone should read it. I think there's also some special value for people like me who are working in leadership positions at colleges and universities because it reveals the daily lives of these students. And I think we have a responsibility to make sure that our diversity and inclusion efforts are reflective of those experiences and to make the changes we need, whether it's changes in our curriculum, whether it's changes in student affairs and residential life. I think it's really important for college and university leadership to reckon with all of these issues. And then finally, you know, I think that the students themselves have been yearning to see their experiences reflected on the page. So if nothing else, if I can kind of give them that opportunity, that would make the book a huge success for me.
You tell stories of many different students in there. When you were doing these interviews, were they in person? What was the process for that? Because there are obviously answers that you can get different answers by sitting across the table from somebody as opposed to starting transferring emails or some messages like that. Tell me a little bit about that process and how you're able to kind of open up and get sort of the best information out of these students.
That's right. Yes, I visited each one of these campuses and spent some time there. You know, usually I would visit for a few days and then fly back to my home outside of Boston and then go on another trip maybe a couple of weeks later. So all of these interviews were face-to-face. As you said, I really believe that that kind of personal face-to-face connection is important for trust building and kind of giving the person you're interviewing the chance to take the conversation in the way that they want to. So I know that there were topics that I wanted to hit on when I interviewed each one of the students. But really, I think the time that we spent hanging out together gave them a comfort level and the opportunity to take the conversation all the ways that they wanted to take it.
I'm curious to know, sometimes when people are willing to talk, they have things to say, but sometimes it's the people who don't want to talk that maybe have the best stories. Did you try to follow that process in any way?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's always difficult to predict which interviews will be sort of the most forthcoming and give you the kind of richest stories. And some of the people who were more introverted, as you said, really did have a lot to say upon reflection. Once they got comfortable, they had a lot to say and many really, I think, powerful insights and experiences to share. But then on the other hand, some of the more extroverted people, the people who were more comfortable talking, really kind of right off the bat, provided insight and told stories that have stayed with me from the moment that I spoke with them. So no matter what sort of personality the student had when we began, everybody had something to contribute.
Sometimes when you think of somebody with the LGBTQ plus community, you always think there's sort of a political action to it. In other words, that's sort of their involvement. They're sort of an activist in a sense like that. What did you see from these students knowing how they wanted to represent themselves, and or what do you see for the youth at this point, at this point in time with this situation?
Yeah, so I think that this is one of the most important things about the book, because one of the reasons I was asking about politics is that, some of the leadership of the Black Lives Matter movement was queer Black women, right? So I thought sort of going into it that more of the college students that I spoke with would identify very strongly with that social movement and sort of see themselves as politically radical. And indeed, there were many students who talked about themselves in that way, right? For some of the students I talked to, every day of their lives was a political act because they've been told for so long that there's something wrong with them or that they shouldn't be proud of who they are. So in expressing that pride, they see every day as a political act. And that was the case for some of the students that I spoke with. But then there are other students who really didn't think of themselves as political at all. They may have been frustrated with things that they saw going on in the news, and they may have a bunch of priorities and values and beliefs about the way that things should go, but they didn't see themselves as radical or activists. They were just trying to kind of get by and enjoy their time in college. So I think what you end up with in the book is a real mix. Again, the diversity of queer Black experiences is what comes through most strongly. For some folks, every day really does feel like a political act. And then for other folks, things feel much more ordinary and mundane. And I wanted to open up space in the book to show the beauty of that kind of ordinary way of living as well.
Again, if people want to find out more about this book or maybe a little bit more about you, and where's a good place to get some information on that?
MichaelPJeffries.com is my website, and the book is available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, NYU Press is the publication. So you can go kind of anywhere on the internet to find it.
Sounds very good. Black and Queer on Campus, the name of the book. Michael P. Jeffries, our guest this morning. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate this talk today.
Thanks for having me.